passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out, and when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
All right, welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, one of the prospect writers here. As always in the Fantasy Podcast, I am joined by my partner in crime, our lead fantasy analyst, the number one preseason favorite in TGFBI, Dylan White. How's it going, man? How are you?
Not too bad. I'm jealous. You're sitting in a hotel room in Florida. I'm about to get 8 inches of snow in Toronto. So we have both ends of the spectrum covered today.
That sounds like a Drake lyric, honestly. That sounds like a Drake lyric. You're getting a foot of snow in Toronto and I'm here in Florida. But yeah, so hey, before we jump into stuff, we got a bunch of news here. We're going to be breaking down outfielders today, the deepest fantasy position, particularly in Dynasty, and we'll get into that in a moment. But I wanted to sort of bring some attention to the Fantasy Summit that we had last Saturday. It was a blast. You and I got to sort of share hosting duties with JJ. I think he did 4 or 5 sessions. I did 4 or 5 sessions. But we also got to be panelists on one session as well, which, as we were saying off air, it was far more relaxing being the panelist versus the host because you didn't have to keep the conversation going. I got to do one on Stuff Plus with Eno where we really dug in deep and really got into sort of the nitty gritty details of like pitching and numbers and why, what this means and what that means and why a certain pitch ranks highly on models or, you know, why it's considered to have great stuff. And that's just always a fun conversation. I love talking pitching. I love Eno when he's talking pitching. So kind of, you know, putting it together was the best of both worlds. I really enjoyed that one. But you were on a session where JJ hosted, and it was you, Rudy Gamble from Razzball, and then Jordan Rosenbaum from Prospects Live, kind of talking about tools and models and kind of what goes into sort of building that sort of thing out. And I thought it was one of the most interesting conversations of the day. I kind of wanted to put you on the spot here and sort of ask you like what your takeaways were, and I'm sure you really enjoyed that session. Like, what were sort of the best parts and highlights?
Yeah, I mean, Rudy Gamble and Razzball and all he's doing there, all his tools and the Streaminator, the Hittertron, the War Room, all that stuff was kind of like inspiration for me to like step up my game and like try to keep up and build my own tools to do the same thing. Jordan Rosenblum one of my best fantasy friends. We're always talking, we're always like exchanging ideas, and we're talking about how do we, you know, figure out ADP value dollars and then figure out what the premium is for saves, like all this sort of thing, and age curves. And he was showing me the Delta method and how you have to be careful not to include the last year for select survivor bias, stuff like that. So it was great to be on a panel with like these sort of heroes of mine who are in the pantheon of data modeling and colleagues. And it's just, yeah, it was just really great. JJ asking great questions. I'm getting to see like their answers and what I would answer. And yeah, and then hosting and moderating these panels too, same thing. It's just the breadth of knowledge that we had on there, talking redraft, talking dynasty, talking prospects. Like it was just such a fantastic breadth of information and knowledge. It was tiring, but it was yes, definitely worth it, I think, for us to do this every year for sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to be posted on the site. I believe today on Friday, all the sessions are being edited up and posted, so you'll be able to watch each session. From, you know, throughout the day, there's over 9 hours of conversation there, kind of spanning everything from, you know, redraft strategy, sleepers and redraft, sleepers and dynasty, dynasty builds and strategy. I thought the NFBC conversation was tremendous, that you moderated. And there was just so much information that you could take away, even for folks that were experienced players. It's just so hard to really know at an expert level or a high level all these different sort of styles of play and leagues and scoring and everything else, and I thought we did a really good job there. And I thought your conversation with Toby and Shelly was great too. That was early on, maybe the second session of the day. The first one was myself, Welsh, and Eric Cross talking some dynasty sleepers. A lot of good names there, digging to that one. But I sat back, and maybe it was because I had just been on air and it was like the first breath of fresh air I had over that early point of the day. But I just thought like it's a really high level conversation in terms of strategy with like Toby, yourself, and Shelly, all folks who have performed really well, you know, in a variety of formats, but like industry competitions as well. You guys have, you know, some serious track record, and you know, it's sometimes nice just to sit back and like be the person taking in the content as opposed to creating it, frankly. So, but anyway, I don't want to go too long on that. Go and check it out. It was a great day. We'll be doing this every year and maybe expanding out to some different events over time. But yeah, sort of a first one, you know, it was nice to, I guess, not to say the negative, but get it out of the way and sort of, you know what it was like. And okay, these are the things we can do better, et cetera. But I think overall it went really, really well. Who has not had things go well for them are a few different players here who have had early camp injuries, some catastrophic. One that kills me because I was banking on this guy filling my middle infield spot and potentially being a breakout this year for the Dodgers. That's Gavin Lux. Pretty ugly injury, out for the season, knees blown out, not great to see. Sort of what's your initial reaction here with Lux, and who do you think the winners could be? Because this isn't like the Dodgers in previous years where they had the next man up that was easy, you know, plug and play guy for fantasy or whatever, right? As we've seen Seager and Turner and, you know, now Lux, it's like, all right, like they're running out of options and they really don't have much depth there outside of like Miguel Rojas. So are you buying in on Rojas, sort of where are you at with this whole Lux injury? Or are you kind of, if you roster him, you're maybe looking for an option on another team right now?
So yeah, terrible. You sent me the tweet saying the Gavin Lux injury looks bad, and it was like definitely winceable. I watched it twice and then that was it. I couldn't watch it anymore. My condolences to Gavin Lux. I mean, I guess it's Miguel Rojas, but for me, I think it's Chris Taylor and Miguel Vargas. So Chris Taylor is going to be getting some action at short. Miguel Vargas is, I mean, he's going to be playing now. I mean, they don't have any options. Mookie Betts will get some value in fantasy leagues because he'll probably play second base some too. They're going to probably be moving people around. I heard Dave Roberts saying Mookie Betts getting some action at second, Chris Taylor at short. He's working on a throwing program to play short. So I set the min on Miguel Vargas today in TGFBI by taking him in the 12th round. He's first base eligible. He will get second base and maybe left field. I just think that it's going to be more playing time and plate appearances for Chris Taylor, Miguel Vargas, probably Miguel Rojas. And all at the expense of Gavin Lux, who we had talked about last time as being, you know, going to drive line, putting on weight, increasing bat speed. It's too bad. I wanted to see what was going to happen because that would have informed my, you know, my future seasons to see if drive line information like that is, you know, actionable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I totally forgot that he had kind of let off the show twice now as like the big news of the week. But last week, we didn't have a lot of bad news. We really just sort of had good news to talk about. This week, not so much. We move on to another injury here. Brendan Rodgers, who was a highly touted prospect, it took a while to break through. He sort of showed some flashes the last couple of years. I had this guy in a 30-team league as my second baseman, and you know, I actually turned down some pretty good offers that I'm very much regretting not taking now. But you know, shoulder injury, potentially out for the season, according to what Bud Black said, that it might cost him the year. That's really concerning long term too. We're like Lux, we see knee injuries, guys come back from that. Especially if there's some power, if he can get his legs back, maybe it will take a year or two. Shoulder stuff is kind of the final frontier in terms of baseball injuries. Pitchers, hitters, these shoulder injuries that we saw with like a Cody Bellinger, for example, it can really sidetrack a guy's career. Pitcher side, Brendan McKay. I mean, Brendan McKay was a top 15-20 prospect. He got DFA'd last year. I mean, you know, shoulder injuries can really put a damper on guys. And you may not, I just don't know. It's like Rodgers even going to return to form again. How would you handle Rodgers right now if you roster him in a fantasy league? Because I could see you're not going to drop him, but you may take what you can get.
Yeah, I mean, these ones are tough because if you have him, you have been invested and you don't want to just sell short if he's going to bounce back. And then, like I said a couple podcasts ago, like they're the vultures that start circling and be like, oh, I'll give you an 8th round pick for Brendan Rodgers. And so it's often off-putting. It's funny, though, call back to the Fantasy Summit. Brendan Rodgers was a topic in a couple of my sessions because he was in redraft one of the sort of the targets and sleepers because his ADP was so much lower than what his like projected performance was going to be. So he was sort of like the second base target after you get through the big, you know, the big 10 or whatever it is, that he was the main target that Shelly and Toby, we talked about it. We talked about it with Steve Wolheimer and Rob DiPietro. It's like, that's the guy in the 15th round or whatever. It's Brendan Rodgers because he's the value. So it's upending people's builds, pre-draft builds right now. I think in terms of who's gonna benefit from this, although it's hard to talk about who's gonna benefit from an injury, I assume Elijuris Montero will get third and Ryan McMahon may move to second. Ryan McMahon has been playing some good defense. I'm not sure. What do you think is gonna, how's it gonna shake out? Roster Resource has Alan Trejo right now at second base.
It could be Trejo, but I will say this: I'm going to sort of take the same approach that you took with the Lux injury, and I think that this maybe puts a little bit more certainty in terms of Tovar breaking camp, which I actually thought was going to happen anyway. But now, I think Tovar, you can pencil him in as their shortstop. You know, Trejo is probably, if he's going to steal any time, it's probably going to be over at second base. But from a fantasy perspective, I do think Montero at third be interesting. I just don't know, having watched Montero in the minors quite a bit over the years, I just don't know if he can handle the third base position every day. I've always thought of him as a long-term first baseman. We'll see how they play it out. I will say this, with the shifting rules and the way that Ezekiel Tovar covers ground between second and third base, they could probably have the worst defensive third baseman in baseball there. And his numbers would look okay, you know, because Tovar would be boosting him up a little bit. Tovar is an absolute, like, all-world defender. He is, I've said it before, I said it on the Rockies podcast last week, he's probably the best shortstop defender that I've personally seen in the minors. And I know that the organization thinks incredibly highly of his makeup. This is a guy that didn't go home during the pandemic to Venezuela. Actually, he didn't return home until January of 2022, I believe, or December of 2021. So he was here for the better part of 2 years. in Arizona at the complex, working on a swing, working, he's very coachable, et cetera. If he's healthy and ready to go, I think Tovar might end up being the guy that benefits the most from this, because there's now certainty behind his playing time. And I think with some of the options that are there, just the defensive value brings a lot to the table for that Rockies team.
I like to hear that. I took Ezekiel Tovar in Tout Wars that just happened on Tuesday afternoon. Do you think that Nolan Jones is now going to break camp?
You know, that's a possibility. I just don't know how much you're going to play him at third either. He's really more of an outfielder at this point. You know, none of these guys are great defensive options at third base. If he out hits Montero, sure. I mean, all these guys are 40 men on the 40-man roster. So that's one element I always try to factor into stuff, of who's going to break camp, who isn't, who has an opportunity. When they don't have to make a 40-man move to put a guy in the 26-man roster, that kind of really makes it a little bit more certain. So, yeah, I think it's a possibility. I don't dislike Jones's skill set either. And he started to make a little bit more contact last year, which had always been kind of an issue. He's a very passive hitter. Started swinging a little bit more. Still has good approach. Is going to walk a lot. If you're in an OBP or a points league, he's definitely more of a target for me. Standard 5x5, I'm a little more wishy-washy. I think I prefer Montero in standard 5x5. I just think that there's more average upside. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, six one way, half a dozen the other. Yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Jones at all.
I don't know. I don't know how to read Jones. I much prefer him in OBP. I always kind of always had him in the same bucket as Will Benson. I think Will Benson may be a bit better because he's got the speed element and a probably better athlete. But it was always like OBP, this is the guy you want, and BA, in batting average, don't really look at him. That's kind of how I was positioning him. But now, I guess, like, you know, in Colorado, and now maybe with the playing time opportunity, Nolan Jones kind of looks interesting. I know, since I'm in a TGFBI draft right now, I'm trying to think of sort of my late round targets, and I'm juggling the idea of whether I take Nolan Jones as one of those. And yeah. Tovar, I'm coming up in the zone where you pick Ezekiel Tovar. I'm in the 13th round now, and I'm considering it highly now, especially after this conversation.
Yeah, there you go. Don't give away all your secrets in TGFBI. We need you to carry it through and win the overall this year, man. That's the goal, you know. That's enough with the bad news for now, at least on hitters. Let's take a break from bad news. Let's go into some good news. Jordan Walker has been phenomenal early in camp. He is the talk of spring training. I feel like I'm having Jordan Walker conversations 4 to 5 times a day with different people. People in my, you know, home league are texting me about Jordan Walker. I had conversations with Gray and Rudy from Razzball about Jordan Walker recently, and a few other folks. And we've had some conversations about him as well. And I cover the Cardinals. You know, Jordan, I've said it before, Jordan's probably my favorite athlete in the world of any sport. I love the guy. I had an opportunity to sit down with him and Mason Wynn the Futures game. I got to chat with him around the cage a couple times at AFL. I just love the guy. I think he's a great personality. He's just really easy to root for, and he is a tremendous talent with great impact. Did a video on him actually on YouTube. Go check that out if you haven't. Kind of broke down some of the numbers, etc. But I have been told that Walker is legitimately in a camp battle. There is a solid chance that he could break camp. He's competing now for a corner outfield spot. I'm kind of hearing it's between him and Nootbaar. I don't know if that means Nootbaar, who's one of my favorite sleepers. We'll get into that a little bit. I don't know if that means Nootbaar slides to DH or if he becomes more of a platoon guy, but there is a real chance early on here in camp that Walker could break camp with the Cardinals. And I think that makes him very, very much a target for me in a lot of these different leagues, especially with what the upside is, considering what the price probably will be, because there's certainly some risk baked into this. I'm excited. I'm really excited to see what sort of happens with Jordan Walker. So I guess I want to ask you, if Walker does break camp, where would you be targeting? You know, like, we find out in 2 weeks he's probably going to break camp. Where do you think his ADP jumps to? Is he going in like the top 100 picks? Do you have him close to Corbin Carroll? I think he could. I mean, the power is huge.
So in the TGFBI draft I'm in now, I took Miguel Vargas in the 12th, and then Jordan Walker went right after. And that's without this breaking information from inside sources. That's the person hoping that Jordan Walker gets called up and plays, and they're still taking him in the 12th. So obviously that's the floor for where his ADP is. I mean, I see him, I think in his first year, 2010, 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases is kind of not the ceiling and not the floor, but that's like, he'd be happy with that, I think. So I don't have him at Corbin Carroll levels yet. Carroll had, you know, a taste of the majors last year. So, you know, maybe he's kind of gotten over that, the jitters of being in the show. So I don't think he's up that high, but you know, someone who goes 2010 in the Cardinals lineup with all the hitters they have there. So there's going to be counting stats. He's definitely intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll follow this as it goes along as we do this podcast. But he is definitely somebody that I am fairly interested in a lot of different formats. Definitely not my NL only, though. I'm definitely not taking him in NL only labor. So if anybody who's in that league is listening to this podcast a few hours before that auction, just don't think I'm going to take him. So you're not going to bid me up on Jordan Walker. Anyway, let's move on to some bad news. We have a couple of pitcher injuries here. It's bound to happen. We have Joe Musgrove is probably going to miss a few starts at this point with a toe. All these toe injuries. Oh, no. Between that and the DeLauder one. And then Tyler Glasnow is hurt again. Grade 2 oblique. I mean, those injuries can last months. So I'm kind of a little bearish on both of these guys now, even taking the discount into effect. What are your thoughts on Musgrove and then sort of Glasnow as well?
Yeah, so they both got taken. I'm going to keep using TGFBI as sort of the anchor, the baseline. They were both taken in the same round. I took Musgrove, and I was hoping to get Glasnow on the way back. So my thoughts are this. Musgrove is projected for, you know, 180 innings. If he misses a bunch of starts, let's call it 150 innings to be conservative. As long as he's performing the way he is, like he's expected to, as long as the toe injury on his landing foot doesn't affect his mechanics, doesn't make him do some, you know, change to the kinetic chain that he's not aware of. And so, you know, maybe the fastball's not as flat anymore, or maybe there's not as much bite to the curve because he's landing gingerly. I still think he's worth targeting. He's probably not going to just miss a couple starts. He's probably going to miss half of April. San Diego's in the run for playoffs and World Series, so they're going to want to, you know, play it properly. So they're not going to rush him unless, of course, you know, they've started off 0-11 or something, and then they need Joe Musgrove to come back to right the ship. With Glasnow, I kind of think it doesn't really change anything that he's coming off TJ. He was never going to throw more than 120 innings anyway. So maybe it's even better to take him now where he's going to miss the first month and a half, 2 months, and then just go straight through to the rest of the season. And then you get the full Glasnow experience. He's very difficult to own because the skills are so good. The production is always so good when he's on the field. It's like the Byron Buxton, but of the pitching realm. I kind of like Glasnow better than Musgrove, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because I'm not sure the toe injury is just take two weeks and then you're back. I think there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff. He's got to get his like muscle memory back to get the mechanics. Like he doesn't want to throw until he's fully healthy. And then he's got to get the muscle memory back. Not that I really know anything about pitching, but that's my expectation. And I just don't know. There's so much uncertainty with Musgrove that I'm a bit more nervous about it.
And if you're not his doctor or the trainer or involved with the team, I mean, it's really hard to know the extent of some of these injuries, and they always downplay them. But I think that's an interesting point on each, where this is kind of like the price check, right? Like it's like, you know, the power equipment that you wanted to buy it, but you didn't want to pay full price. They put out a new model, so they discount those by 20%. And all of a sudden you're getting the thing that you wanted for 20% less. With Glasnow, that is an interesting take, because this kind of puts him into a price point that I like, and it may not impact the total number of innings if he starts the season in May or something like that. it may mean that you have him a little bit later than you had anticipated, right? So, but again, it's piling up with this guy. And, you know, the I know we always talk about this one. It's my favorite Jeff Zimmermanism. But it's sort of like with pitchers, past injuries, best predictor of future injuries. We got more injuries going here. He's a big body. He's a big guy. He's coming off a pretty substantial injury. Yeah, that becomes a lot more of a question to me, just because there's a lot of risk there. But there was always a lot of risk with Glasnow, especially if you took him early. And now it's price checked. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit better. I could see that being sort of impact. But just spent 20 minutes or so on news. So let's jump into the meat of this podcast, the real meal. We've had the appetizer. You know, we're ready. We've had our first drink. We're jumping into the dinner. Outfielders are insanely deep. I know that we were talking about this before we got on air, but you go through like the first 12 names on this list, and it is some of the best fantasy players in every format. Soto, Rodriguez, Acuna, Tucker, Judge, Alvarez, Tatis, Trout, Betts, Harper, Michael Harris, Corbin Carroll. I mean, not only are these, you know, top few round sort of players, they're also some of like the sexiest names to own that you're building your team around. If you have three of these guys in your dynasty league, you're probably have a pretty high chance of like winning most of your hitting categories, you know? So I guess sort of like big picture thoughts here on the outfield group, because we'll get into some of our targets in a minute. Yeah. I mean, there's no position that's this deep, even shortstops, which I know we went 100 on.
Yeah, I mean, we're making a dynasty list, and that's like you said, the first 10 names there are basically 10 of the first 15 names in a redraft. They're in that sweet spot where Julio Rodriguez, Michael Harris, Corbin Carroll, they did enough in the majors to show that it seems like they are going to meet their potential, and they're so young that everyone wants, like, possibly they're going to build on what they did. So Julio Rodriguez, I've seen go like 1-1 in redraft. And obviously that makes sense in a dynasty because he's so young, but in a redraft, it kind of makes sense on some level too. So yeah, it's so deep. We went 150 names plus prospects, and like the last names in the 150, like Jorge Soler, Kerry Carpenter, like these are people who are still relevant in redraft. So it just goes to show the depth of the position.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I kind of wanted to sort of pick out a couple of names here around the top 20. The first question I'm going to ask kind of ties into a conversation we already have. If Walker breaks camp, we have him ranked 21 right now. How high do you push Walker up? I think personally, I'd move him to 13 and move Arozarena, you know, Robert Jimenez down. How high would you push up Walker if he does break camp? Because I think that adds a little bit more immediacy at 21 years old. So he has the age advantage there too. And there's some speed and there's a ton of power.
I think that's the right spot, because I think if you did a poll of would you trade Jordan Walker for Luis Robert or Randy Arozarena, I think half the people would say Robert. It's because he's done it already, and you're hoping Jordan Walker becomes what Luis Robert is. And then the other half saying, no way, it's totally Jordan Walker. We know what Luis Robert is. Jordan Walker can beat that, and he's younger, etc. So I think that's the exact spot. Would you trade Luis Robert for Jordan Walker? I think I know the answer.
I think I would, yeah. I think I would. I would definitely do Arozarena, and then, yeah, Robert. Yeah, and after that, I don't even have any questions. I think Carroll is sort of a barrier there. Like, I would not trade Walker for Carroll.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Yeah, and then the next question I wanted to ask, another sort of buzzy name here. We have Jackson Churio 16 right now. I know that internally at BA, we love Jackson Churio. We have him ranked super high. Josh Norris has a full portrait of Jackson Churio like on his back tattooed. Josh, if you're listening to this, that's true. You know it. So he's sort of a divisive name, though, because he's so young. But when we look at the performance and we look at how young he was with that performance, got up to AA for 6 games or so, whatever, but really performed across both levels of A-ball. And I don't think the plan coming out of 2021 was to have this guy in full season ball as early as they did. But I think they saw him in camp. They saw how good he was. We started to get some sort of whispers and reports from scouts that were out there in Arizona. Like, this guy is special. I think he is incredibly special. I think the contact and approach is going to get even better. It's at a point now where it just needs to tick up a little bit to sort of be in that really nice range where you're kind of believing everything. And the power and bat speed and athleticism and twitch, it's tremendous. And he's probably going to be able to run a little bit too. So, yeah, I mean, for me, I kind of view Churio a little bit like the way I viewed Ronald Acuna when he was a prospect. Not to say that he will turn into Ronald Acuna, but I think it's that sort of an exciting player that he could be in the majors at 19 and it wouldn't shock anybody.
Yeah, I think, I personally think Churio is maybe less speed than Acuna and more power. I think we have him in the right spot. It's exactly the same sort of thing that, like, I wouldn't trade Churio, I wouldn't trade Robert or Rosarena for Churio now, but I know I would regret it. And I think half the people would and half the people wouldn't. And then, but we have him ahead of, say, a Suzuki, Byron Buxton, people who, Cedric Mullins, who have some questions whether they'll keep it up, whether this is their ceiling, whether or not they're going to be injury prone. And so I think we have them in that right area. But like Jackson Churio can obviously be in that top five very easily. You say he could be in the majors at 19. Yeah. So that's like Juan Soto. That's like Ronald Acuna. That's, we're talking about the stratosphere of dynasty talents. So it's definitely within the realm of possibility. And I think that's why we have him so high, obviously.
Yeah, and I think it is more power than speed than Acuna, you know. But I think it's just like when I look at the swing, the explosiveness, the bat speed, stuff like that, like I tend to isolate sometimes on what guys do in the box. And yeah, I think that that's an appropriate way to sort of phrase it. All right, cool. I think there was a couple of names up top I wanted to talk about. Let's get into some of our targets. My first target was James Wood. I was greedy, so I picked two. I also grabbed Lars Nootbaar. You had a target of Emmanuel Rodriguez. We have two of the top sort of outfield prospects here in the game. Talk to me about why you like Rodriguez. And I think there's probably some commonality with the reasons I like Wood, but I want to put you on the spot here and talk a little bit about Emmanuel Rodriguez, and a guy that's really moved up boards quite a bit.
Yeah, he didn't play that long before he had a knee injury. And that's probably what's kind of holding him back from skyrocketing, that there's a bit of conservatism on whether or not, you know, let's see him do it over a longer period of time. But in that 200 plate appearances, he had an 18% walk rate, which was basically a 500 on base percentage. He had a chase rate of only 12%. So his pitch recognition is basically elite. It doesn't get any better than that in the minors. And then the power, the exit velocities and all that was just so great. So the only thing holding back is this knee injury where he had to have surgery. He's got the power. The contact maybe isn't as great, but the power is so good and the pitch recognition is so good that it kind of supersedes the average contact. He's so young. So really it's just the injury. So he doesn't have the sample size. He doesn't have the sort of the history of production behind him to make us really feel confident. And then, you know, there's always questions coming back from injury, whether or not he'll get back to 100%. But yeah, I think he will. I'm betting on that he will for sure. And he's my target, especially in OBP.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have sort of a similar guy here in James Wood, part of the Juan Soto trade. One of my favorite prospects in baseball. We have him sort of at 22, so just outside of the top 20 in terms of outfielders. It's huge power. I mean, he's a big guy at 6'7", 240 pounds, but it's an athletic build. You know, he's going to stick in the outfield. He can run a little bit. Another guy that doesn't chase very much, really good, actually pretty good contact too, and then enormous power. And there might even be more power to come. And he's so big and long, kind of similar to Jordan Walker, where he uses those long levers to sort of like hit balls all over the zone and has really good feel for the barrel. I'm really excited about Wood. I wish I rostered him in more leagues. He's a really tough guy to sort of pry away from dynasty managers. I know I got him probably fairly late in Highlander last year. And that's one of those times you're like, oh, thank God I drafted this guy, because it makes my team just so much more enjoyable to look at and think about long term. Also gives me a really good trade chip if I decide to do that. But yeah, I think this is one of those guys that kind of falls into my sort of bucket of like, you know, above average, of average or better contact, average or better approach, and then, you know, plus power. And I love the guys with the impact like this. So yeah, Wood is definitely one for me that I'm all over. Other target that I had picked out here was Lars Nootbaar. Kind of similar reasons, you know, above average contact, the strikeout rate and walk rate were pretty much even in the second half. I think I wrote that up for the magazine for my, you know, my breakout hitter was Nootbaar. I guess my only question now with him is just like, how does Jordan Walker kind of throw, you know, a wrench into those plans a little bit? But maybe not. I mean, you know, maybe he ends up at DH and, you know, that means Yepes is sort of the odd man out. They got a lot of options there. I'm praying that Nootbaar gets 500 at bats because this is a or plate appearance. This is a guy that has the approach. He's, you know, an elite walk guy. There's good power. The contact is pretty good. And he had a way outlier BABIP last year. I mean, I think it was like 240 or like 245, something in that range. I would imagine that regresses closer to 300. I know that he's a fly ball hitter, but not so dramatically that, you know, it should be that high. I'm kind of interested to see sort of how it shakes out. If he gets those plate appearances and he gets a little bit more luck on balls in play this year, this could be a guy that breaks out big, has a pretty good batting average. I could see a, you know, 275 season with 25 home runs and a lot of RBIs and runs because he's in a really good St. Louis lineup that seems to be getting better and better by the week.
Yeah, Carlos Collazo this week did an article about NCAA hitters, and he kind of plotted contact on the x-axis and exit velocity on the y-axis, which is my favorite graph to use. If you did the same for 2021 minor leagues, Lars Nootbaar, so this is before the quote-unquote breakout last year, he was in the top right corner of that graph. His contact and his exit velocities were off the chart. So like that portends future success, contact and exit velocity. So yeah, really, it's a question of opportunity. If he makes it into the major league camp, he's starting, he's getting regular plate appearances, everything you said there, 275, 25 home runs, that's almost baked in as far as I'm concerned. If he's going to get 600 plate appearances, that's a given for me. So it's really just a question, and that's why I'm hesitant to buy in 2023 in redraft leagues. I'm hesitant to buy in Lars Nootbaar, just especially because of the Jordan Walker news. It sounds like he's going to come out of camp possibly, so Nootbaar is kind of the odd man out. And speaking of that, Dylan Carlson then also gets a kind of a boost because it sounds like he's already, you know, permanently in the lineup. So maybe Dylan Carlson gets a bit of a boost. So.
Perhaps for now. I mean, I think it's the center field defense that's going to keep him there. He also was another guy kind of like Jonathan India last year where he dealt with a lot of injuries. But he was my breakout hitter last year. So apparently I picked the wrong Cardinal too often. So we'll see what happens with that. But before we get into our dynasty sleepers, let's take a quick break here, Dylan. All right. And we're back. Fantasy Podcast. This is Jeff Ponce. I'm with Dylan White. We are talking through our outfield rankings. We just went through our targets. We're going to go into a pair of sleepers that we each have here before we sort of wrap things up. I'm really interested. The first sleeper that you have here is Esteury Ruiz. We have him just outside of the top 50. We all know about the speed. We all know about the numbers last year. Been in three organizations now. Do you think he finally sort of finds some flow and playing time at the major league level, gets consistent at bats so we can see him do something crazy like steal 50 bases? There's no reason the A's shouldn't just let all these guys run, frankly.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I think he got a sag in his value because of the three teams, because he, you know, people are digging into his exit velocity and they're saying, oh, he has no power, this is all a mirage. And I think we overcorrected by downgrading his abilities. I think he's minimum 30 stolen bases if he gets 600 plate appearances. I think his defense is strong enough, especially on an Oakland Athletics team, that he should get regular playing time. And if that's the case, then he's definitely undervalued at where he's going, even in redraft. He may not have the greatest average, especially this year, because he's, you know, getting acclimatized to the majors, etc. But, you know, 30 stolen bases, minimum, 10 home runs. I still think he can get into 10 home runs. I just think that he's undervalued for where people have overcorrected and really been down on where he was. He was such a darling last year, especially because he dominated so much in the minor leagues, that people kind of really, really threw cold water on him when he struggled in the majors.
Yeah, and I think he's one of these guys. I guess the one question I have is you're starting to hear, like, it could be Laureano with Blade in center field, and then Seth Brown has been getting some run in left. I don't know if that's because they want Noda, who is the second pick in the Rule 5 draft, to make the team. And I don't know. I don't know how that shakes out. But he seems to me like a guy that maybe you're kind of like a little nervous over the first month of the season, and then there's an injury, something happens, and he gets his runway to sort of do what he does and sticks in the lineup permanently. You know, I wouldn't fade him too much because of sort of the Blade addition, but it sort of is what it is. My first target here is somebody that you wanted to fight me. I'm sure you were cursing under your breath when I took him. That is Samuel Zavala, outfielder from San Diego Padres. He was the youngest player to play at a full season level last year. He was 17. Played in the Midwest League. I think it was 33 games, hit 254, 355, 508, 13.5% walk rate, kept the strikeout rate fairly respectable considering the age and level, only 26%, and he's facing a lot of guys sort of out of the draft. There's power there too. I'm sort of sold on the exit velocity numbers. Over that sample, he had an 88.2 mile per hour average exit velocity. The 90th percentile exit velocity was 103.5, which is great for that age. And the hard hit rate was just under 40%. So I think as you see this guy mature, probably add some strength, he's a really exciting prospect. And this is a guy that I, you know, when we do our breakouts in a week or two with Matt Eddy, this is a guy that I think all of us are probably going to be targeting as a potential breakout this year and someone that could burst his way into the top 100. And, you know, who knows where he ends up landing by the end of the season. What are your thoughts on Zavala? Because I know he's one of your favorites as well.
Yeah, I think he literally is my favorite prospect right now. If you take what he's done, home run per plate appearance, and you do apply the age curves, historical age curves for someone at that age, even at that level, he looks like he's going to peak at 30 home runs. It looks like he's going to peak at like mid 30 home runs. So a lot can happen between now and then. He's 18. He turned 18, I think, 2 weeks before he went to low A. He was the youngest in full season ball. A lot can happen, but a lot can happen in the good way too. So I think you may have to wait, but I think 30 home runs, corner outfield profile is in the cards. I think the Padres, he's one of their crown jewels, you know, with Jackson Merrill and Dylan Lesko. They want, you know, he's one of the big three that they want to make sure, you know, is the sort of the crown jewel of the organization in 5 years or so.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that we've seen time and time again with the Padres is they have a guy who sort of bursts onto the scene every single season, and they sort of had Merrill and him, and we haven't gotten like a full taste of either of those guys yet. And you know, we'll see what happens, but I think they're really exciting. You have another sleeper here that I really like, and he's a guy that always shows up when I sort of do my data searches of like sort of a minimum contact rate, minimum walk rate, and then the exit velocity, 90th percentile, or average or hard hit rate, however I sort of break down the batted ball stuff. But Tyler Gentry, you know, was at Alabama, got drafted a few years ago. He was sort of a standout over the first 2 months. He had an injury sort of baked into the few weeks in the Midwest League. He was the best hitter in the Midwest League out the gate. You know, ends up going up to Double A, performs in Double A. I guess sort of the question with him is just like, could he see the majors this year? Sort of what are your expectations? Because this is definitely a guy that has a pretty polished plate profile. And, you know, with sort of this young core here with the Royals, if things sort of get going, it would be kind of interesting to see if, you know, he could find his way up to the majors by the end of the year. What are your thoughts on?
I think he's one of the most underrated prospects in the minors right now. He put up a 300, 400, 500 slash line across two levels. He's got 50s or 55s across all the tool grades, and no one's really talking about him. I know people are, but it's like that's Brian Reynolds type of thing. He's in the Kansas City Royals, where their hitting has really taken a turn in the positive way with MJ Melendez, Vinny Pasquantino. Like, it's just they may struggle on the pitching development side, but on the hitting development side, they're doing quite well. He's got a nice arm in right field. I kind of think he's going to make it to the majors this year. He'll probably be in AAA, but I just feel that he was so consistent and just so solid across the board last year that he's going to knock on the door early in the season, and then he's going to be called up in the second half.
Yeah, I agree there. And also, I want to make a correction. I said that Sammy Zavala was in the Midwest League. He was not. He was in the Cal League. So take that for what it's worth. I made a mistake there. Apologies. I sometimes forget that the Midwest League isn't low A any longer. You know, they flipped that around on us and just made us all messed up. So my next sort of target here is somebody I think I've talked about a ton. Hasn't debuted stateside yet, should this year. That's Josue de Paula, really interesting player. He's been getting sort of Yordan Alvarez comps from a lot of folks that have, you know, been around, or, you know, coaches, folks that have coached against him. He's Stefan Marbury's cousin. That's the thing I always bring up because I think it's really interesting. He's a pretty good athlete for size, really good plate skills, and a guy that I think has some projectable power as well. So he's another really interesting name for me that, you know, I want to roster him in as many leagues as I possibly can. There's certainly some risk here, but I tend to think when the plate skills are good and there's a lot of projection within the body and the power, there's no reason sort of not to go after a guy like that. I don't know if you have any sort of De Paula thoughts here as we wrap up or not.
I have De Paula in a couple leagues. I made a comp tool for the minor leagues where it basically takes the profile, walk rate, strikeout rate, ground ball rate, home run rate, stolen base rate, et cetera. And it finds comps historically since, you know, the last 20 years or so. And his comps, I don't have them offhand, but it was like Rafael Devers, Julio Rodriguez. It's like, it's ridiculous, the stuff that he was doing at that age, at that level. I really like De Paula. I think, I mean, you took DePaul, you took Samuel Zavala. Like you said, I was ruining your name and then shaking my fist at the sky. those are two of my favorite prospects. Them and even Yasser Mercedes on the Minnesota Twins. He's been getting a lot of buzz, a high profile international name a couple years ago, and he really did well last year. Power speed blend as well. But like those three, and maybe add Miguel Blaise. So Miguel Blaise, Josue de Paula, Samuel Zavala, and Yasser Mercedes are sort of like the four that are poised to jump up all the prospect lists, despite not even really playing in full season ball for a substantial amount of time. So those are my four. De Paula being in there just, you know, speaks volumes to what I think of him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these are all great targets. You can go and read the rest of our rankings here. On Baseball America, we're going to have the pitcher rankings out sort of Tuesday, I believe, in next week. And then we'll follow that up, I think, on Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday with a full dynasty list, all the positional rankings together and ranked out. And then the preseason for us kind of really begins. That's when I'm going to like jet off to spring training full time. You're going to start diving in on some other deep dives on different things. So be on a lookout for that. But Dylan, anything you want to say here before we sort of wrap up the show?
No, I guess stay cool if you can in Florida while I'm trying to dig out my car and my home from the blizzard I'm about to have unleashed upon me.
Yeah, I wish you well with that. And I hope it's a pretty snowfall and you get to cozy by the fire and watch some, you know, TV or Netflix or whatever. We'll figure it out, or do some rankings. Think about some baseball. Watch some spring training games. You got spring training games going on, college games. It's baseball. What am I talking about? You don't need to watch Netflix any longer. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We appreciate all the great feedback that we've been getting on these shows. We're going to keep on rolling them out there. And best luck in your drafts, guys.
Cheers.